Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 257, and we'll continue where we stopped last time in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 12. The Apostle Paul is talking about matters of marriage and problems that may arise in one's life within the marriage. And sometimes it has to do with the faith, sometimes other things. In either case, he says in terms of the woman or the man that may not be in the faith, if they want to stick around, so to speak, if they want to stay here, if they're willing to stay with you, there is no reason for you to divorce. You see, there is no spiritual ground for it. There is no physical ground for it either. Obviously, if a person is willing to stay, there is no reason for it. Yet a lot of people, you know, want to take any excuse in the world to separate from each other, and God hates divorce. That is, he hates the abuse of it. He hates the consequences, all the sufferings that come upon the children, the breaking of relationships, the destruction that comes to many, the hurts. You see? You know, when there is no choice, there is no choice. He has to do it himself, had to divorce his own wife. He sent Israel away. But, generally speaking, as Paul would say, as much as it is within any one of us to live in peace with all men, and especially the household of God, you see, and you might say especially your own mate, for the sake of the children, for the sake of the relationship, and you learn a lot from it. And so that's what Paul is addressing this group here, verse 12. But to the rest, I speak, you see, not the Lord. In other words, that's my understanding of the law of God. If any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she's willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. That's not a ground for divorce. There are many rules and regulations in terms of the law of God that give you a very clear understanding. When is it that you can, when is it that you cannot, and this is not one of them. So you have no reason to do it. Just because she's not a part of the faith, you know, you're going to have some problems with it, obviously, but you can live with it. God lived with his wife Israel, with all the troubles that he had with her. She certainly was unconverted. He didn't throw her, you know, short time after he married her because of her carnality. He was long-suffering with her to the point where he was willing to give his life for her. Well, he's not asking here, you know, the husband to give his life for her in the same manner. So the least he can do, if she's willing to stay, stick around. Let her be there. Love her, you see, in accordance with the law of God. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your friend. Love your husband, your wife, your children. You know, you don't throw your children out of the house just because, you know, they don't have to be in the faith. You know, they're not converted. Things like that doesn't make sense. Yet a lot of people have all kind of notions like that, unfortunately, because of carnality. And so he says also about the woman who is a husband who does not believe, if he's willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. Why should he? So he says, that's my instruction. I don't see any reason there, you know, to divorce under these circumstances. And he made it very plain. God didn't tell me that. You see, but to the rest, he says, I, not the Lord, say. Yet at the same time, that's the understanding of the law of love. When you discern the understanding of the law, you know, the spirit of the law, you comprehend that. This is not one of the reasons why God told us that, you know, because of certain exceptions in life, whatever they may be, we can still go through this divorce, but not this kind of cases. And that was during the time, even in the Jewish community, they had a lot of problems with that. There were a lot of prostitutes, a lot of harlots. You hear a lot about that. Why? Because men, you know, played games, you know, with their women so easily. They got rid of them, didn't like them, threw them out. So what happens to them? What does it do to the society, to the community, to the children? You see, that's not in accordance with the law of love. And therefore, that's what he's saying here. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, you see, if he stays, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband, otherwise your children would be unclean. Well, what happens when you don't have children? Well, that's not an issue. But still, if they're willing to stay with you, you should allow them to stay with you, and you should learn to love them no matter what, just like God loves us. He doesn't wait until we become perfect and converted before he begins to love us and continue to care for us. So we should learn from our God, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and his example. And this is what the Apostle Paul draws on, the very nature and character of God. So now he says, now that your children are holy, yeah, they're sanctified by your faith. They're sanctified, in other words, put aside, you see, sanctified, and God takes care of them, cares for them, and the holy angels that care for his people care also for their families. That sanctifies them. And then hopefully, you know, they follow your example and you're a good example to them, and they realize, you know, your religion is, after all, and it's a good religion. You know, it does a lot of good, and so you never know what God may do with those people, those children. That's the reason why God says, don't be so quick, just get rid of it. You see, get rid of your children, get rid of your wife or husband or whatever it may be because they're not converted. You see, that's no reason to do it. And so he says in verse 15, but if the unbeliever departs, now that's on the other hand. That's not your choice. You didn't initiate that. If they depart, husband and wife, let him depart. That's his choice. That's her choice. A brother or a sister that is in the faith is not under bondage in such cases. What bondage is he talking about? To the law of God, to the law of marriage. In other words, you're free. That's what he's saying here. If they're not willing to fulfill the responsibility that just take off, God is not holding you, holding you responsible here and accountable and bound in this marriage. That person, by their action, you see, created that breakup in the marriage. You did not do it. You see? Well, God is not going to tell you now, wait a minute, you know, that's your problem, you know. The departed, you're going to stick around unmarried. He doesn't say that. He says, you are now no longer under bondage. You see, the bondage is talking about to the law of God, to the law of marriage. That's what he's saying here. As he talked about in Romans chapter 7, you know, as long as a man and a woman are alive, you know, you are bound. You see, that's bondage. To be bound, you see. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, the right or wrong kind of bondage. But in other words, you're under the law. But if they depart, it's as if they died. You're free at that point. You see, so that's another example, you know, and we went through it, cases where divorce can occur. And so he said, yeah, you're no longer at this point under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. He didn't call us to war and strife, you know. They want to leave, they want to leave. You know, what can you do? You try your best. You see, why do you want to have war? You don't have to have war. Live at peace. Let them go. You see, you didn't choose that kind of life. They did. And they brought it upon themselves. Well, God says, you're free at this point. You know, you want to get married, get married. It's not an issue of divorce. It's not an issue of adultery. It's not an issue of fornication. It's not an issue of all those things. You see, this is one of the exceptions here. And we covered it in detail before, so we're not going to repeat it again. Verse 16, for how do you know a wife, that is, you know, if they stay around, the husband or the wife, whether you will save your husband, or how do you know, or husband, whether you will save your wife? You see, what is it that God wants for all of us? God loved so much the whole world, not only his own people, Israel, but he loved the whole world. He didn't want any to perish. You see, he's not interested in divorce. The permanent kind, well, they're gone because of their sin and iniquity. He wants them to turn around. So that's what, in essence, what he's saying to them. Well, you know, if you love them, if you continue to walk in the faith, you don't make their life miserable, and you don't shove your religion down their throat, you never know. They may be saved. By your example, turn around and, you know, be willing to walk in your path, follow you, follow your example, and God is going to open their eyes and deal with them. After all, he's not interested in the destruction of the family. And that's what he's saying here. How do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband, or how do you know, or husband, whether you will save your wife? You have the capacity under these circumstances to be the salvation of your husband and wife and children, you see, if you show them the right example, the nature of God. If you see, if God lives his life in you, the person sees the results of it, and they want of the same too. In that, you lead them to salvation. It's not that you yourself are the Savior. Only God can do it. Only Jesus Christ can do it, you see. But you are a facilitator in this area instead of being the obstacle. That's what he's talking about here. That's your part in the salvation of mankind. Don't be an obstacle to them by professing religiosity on one hand and then behaving in a different manner, and that becomes a stumbling block to others. So whether it be your wife, husband, brother, sister, children, or the world, be a shining light to the world. You see, not ascension the nostrils of God and of men. And that's what he's saying here in essence. But as God has distributed to each one, that is the Father, as the Lord has called each one, obviously the Father is the one that does the calling, and he gives us to Christ, so let him walk. You see? So I ordain in all the churches. God gave him that authority to do so. God called you in this manner, continue to be in that way, unless it is, you know, something that is of a problem in terms of sin and iniquity or harm for you, you see, or threat or fear or death or things like that. You know, in other words, there are still many circumstances to deal with on a personal basis, on an individual basis, case by case, you see, all in accordance with the law of God, the nature of God, the intent of the spirit of the law, and so forth. So for that reason, you need many counselors and a lot of maturity there and no personal agenda to do, you know, get your own way, go or do your own thing. So he says, well, verse 18, was anyone called circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Was anyone called while uncircumcised? Let him not be circumcised. What is he talking about here? We talked about the circumcision issue before that. God called you in a certain way of life. You see, walk in it. If later on God puts it in your heart to get circumcised, go ahead and do it, just like he did with Father Abraham. But now that you've already given your heart and mind and body to God, you see, this is not what God is after, you know, the most of all things, no more than he was after Abraham. You know, as soon as he called him, he was quite a bit younger, you see, before he came to the land, because he called him several years before he came to the land, before he was 75. A lot of people don't understand that. They think that he was 75 when God called him, and he was not. That was the second calling. He called him while he was in the land of Babylon, or the Chaldean. Then he went to Haran with a family, thinking that they're all going to the land of Canaan, heeding the call of God. And God didn't want the whole family there, so they all had to stay around until the father died. Then Abraham was able to get out. That's when God told him. But throughout all this period of time, he never told Abraham, now wait a minute, before he come into the land, or as soon as he called him in Ur of the Chaldeans, I want you circumcised. Didn't ask him to do it, so we don't know how long it was, maybe 30, maybe 40, maybe 50 years. That's in essence what Paul is talking about, and the Jews at the time forgot that, therefore they did not understand it. And that was an issue, you see. So always understand what it means, because a lot of people go from one extreme to the other, and they think, oh, that's an Old Testament stuff. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with certain matters where God tells you to do it, you do it, you see. Even though it's a part of the law, you see, likewise with the children of Israel, as we explained that before that, for 40 years, God did not demand that they get circumcised. He allowed them to go that way. Reasons known to him. It's up to him to decide that, the timing, you see. And 40 years later, when they were about to enter into the land, he commanded Joshua, you better circumcise all of them, you see. I don't want them in, you know, uncircumcised. Well, that's a part of the story here. The law of God is still the same. So we have to know the law of God, and also we have to understand the circumstances and when God demands certain things to be done. Verse 19, he said, circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing, but keeping the commandments of God is what matters. That's the issue. Abraham kept the commandments of God. Abraham didn't say, well, I'm spiritual, I don't need to, you know, keep the law. You know, God did it away with the law or something like that. Or later on, you know, people said in their ignorance, well, you know, I'm circumcised in the Spirit. I'm of Christ. I don't need to keep the law. Christ did it for me. It was nailed to the cross, you see. I'm spiritual. I don't need to do all those physical things. And that's foolishness and ignorance. Paul makes it very plain. You do not keep the commandments of God, nothing matters. If you do keep the commandments of God, and then God tells you, I want you also to get circumcised. After all, just a tiny little physical act, you know, it's not a huge thing, you know, a great stumbling block, you know. You got wrath, and you get lust and covetousness, and those are heavy things, you know. It takes a long time to get rid of it, to get it out of your system. But, you know, a little circumcision, few moments, and it's all done. One little action. Well, God can ask you to do it any time. If you're obeying the commandments of God, that's not an issue. Well, what happens if you're not an obedient, you know, person? You do not obey the commandments of God. Then, you know, every little thing becomes an issue. You see, it makes you a rebel. And so Paul constantly makes it very, very plain. The law of God is still there. And if you keep the commandments of God, you see, then that's all that matters. Because then whatever God is going to ask you, you're going to do. Just like with Abraham. When God told him way down the road to get circumcised, it wasn't an issue for him. Not only him, he circumcised everybody in his household. And all of them accepted it because all of them were obedient to the commandments of God. Being in the household of Abraham, they were not rebel rousers, you know, idol worshippers, doing their own thing, having their own religions within the household of Abraham. You see, when people understand that, then they begin to understand the law of God and its nature and the circumstances, you see, that surround it, you know, concerning this detail or that detail. And so he says here, let each one remain in the same calling in which he was called, unless God tells you otherwise, puts it in your heart to do otherwise. Were you called while a slave? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can be free, you know, if you can be made free, you know, by your freedom, rather use it. Because God doesn't want us to be slaves. So whatever you can do, do. What you can do, you can do. You see? And so forth. And so he says in verse 22, for he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. You see, you are free men in the Lord. Likewise, who is called while free is Christ's slave. You're a slave one way or the other. So I have a choice to either be a slave to the world or a slave to Christ, slave to God, slave to the commandments, you see, which are a bondage, a yoke of bondage, but not an evil one. You see, it's not an evil one. That's the problem. People think it's an evil yoke of bondage, but Christ said very plainly, come unto me, all of you who are heavy, you know, burdened with laden, you know, with all kind of sorrows and pain and afflictions and sickness and disease and troubles and poverty and fear and death. You see, all kind of things like that that we have to go through in this life, unfortunately. He said, come to me, take my yoke. It's a yoke that you have to take. Taking the cross upon your shoulders, so to speak, spiritually speaking, and carrying it all the way to the end, that's a burden. That's a yoke of bondage. You see? But then Christ said, my yoke is easy. And John said, his commandments are not grievous. Yet the world regards them as such. And so they don't like that yoke of bondage. And they have only negative concepts about it. And they despise it. And they hate it. They want total freedom to do whatever they want. License to commit adultery and fornication and stealing and robbery and cheating and reviling and doing anything they want. Well, these are not people of God, and yet the whole religion calling itself Christianity is full of that. And they are not even aware of that. A lot of them are sincere, nice people, gentle people, nice to be with, pleasant people. But nevertheless, because of ignorance and blindness, they have thrown away the yoke of bondage of God and of Jesus Christ. Not understanding that it is easy. It's not difficult. If you hate it, anything is difficult. But when you love it, like a labor of love, just like when you love somebody, a boy or a girl, you're willing to go from one end of town to the other, or maybe even from one end of the country to the other, to go see them, spend time with them. But what happens when you don't like them? Even going, you know, 200 feet, it's too much. You don't want to do it. You see? So it all depends on your perspective. When you love, it's nothing. It's when you don't love that it becomes a heavy, grievous burden and yoke of bondage. You see? So understand it, what he's talking about here. Just like, you know, the bondage that he talked about, you know, of marriage. Hey, if you love one another, that's a wonderful bondage to be under. You enjoy it. What happens when you hate one another? You can't stand one another. Then even the lightest kind of burden that you have there is despicable in your sight and you can't take it anymore. You see? So understand it from God's point of view. From the point of view of the law of God, which is the nature and mind of God. That's what he's talking about here. You have to know the law of God before you begin to understand what are the instructions that he gives us and why they're there. And so that's what he's saying here. You know, you've been called a slave. Okay, no problem. You know, you're the slave of Christ anyway. So, what's a big deal? You know, you serve men, you serve God, you know, you develop character. Don't worry about it. You know, if you can get free, you know, from that slavery, physical slavery, you know, fine, do it. After all, you know, which one of us wouldn't like to be free, you know, from the government, from taxation, you know, from a job, you know, from all the burdens of this life and just be free, have our own piece of land, be in our own, you know, environment and do our own thing, so to speak, have freedom. Well, if we can do it, fine, but if we can't, we can't. We shouldn't complain and revile people and hate people for it and grumble all the time. You see? Go through it until the end of the road, and then after that there is total freedom. In the law, we'll never be out of the law. And that's what he's saying here. Verse 23, we're bought with a price. You see? God paid the price. Jesus Christ was the price, was the ransom. He said, do not become slaves of men. You see? He's not talking about slaves only physically speaking, but spiritually. Slave to the culture, slave to the fashion of the world, you know, slave to entertainment, slave to all kind of things, you know, that the world places on you. He said, don't be a slave to the world, don't be a slave to men. Brethren, verse 24, let each one remain with God in that state in which he was called, with God. You see, he didn't say with Christ, but with God. He is the head. And Paul would constantly emphasize that because Paul was not the Christian that people thought that he was. Doing away with the law of God, inventing a new religion called Christianity. You see? Freedom. Just, you know, believe, have faith, live by grace. That's not Paul. There's a false concept of Paul, a false concept of Christ, a false concept of God. They've got a pagan religion. They're blind and ignorant. That's why they don't understand that. So it makes it very plain. You remain with God, with His law, with His nature and character, with His instructions, with His Torah. And when you do, you're remaining with Christ, because they're both the same. Verse 25, now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord. You know, God didn't tell me anything about it. Christ didn't tell me anything about it. So I'm not going to boast or claim, well, you know, this is what God told me, as the manner of many is, lying in the name of God. And God says, you know, there are all those prophets there. They speak in my name, and I haven't said anything to them. I didn't tell them to do all those kind of things. Yet the world is full of them. They pretend to be religious people, people of God, and they are not. If you know the law of God, you know exactly where they come from. But if you don't, well, you're ignorant, and you think that they are the people of God. So I say, making it very plain. When, you know, we are in that category, we should make it very plain. Look, you know, God didn't tell me to do that. I don't see it anywhere in the law. I just understand it. You see, that's my understanding of the law of God. So he says, now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in His mercy has made trustworthy. That's why I make this judgment, you see, because God called me, gave me an understanding, gave me the discerning of the Spirit, didn't give me any explicit explanation or instruction or command, but based on my understanding of His nature, mind, and character, having the Spirit in me, I am capable of doing it. And that's how people should talk when they're in that position. You see? Not deceive people to think that, well, God talks to me and He told me that. A lot of people say, you know, the Lord said and the Lord said and the Lord didn't say that. They're liars. The whole world is full of them. Verse 26, he says, I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress. And now he's explaining the whole issue. Why is it that he said it's not good to get married because of the present distress? So until you get to verse 26, you may not know why is he saying what he's saying, which seems to be contrary to the law of God. The very commands of God, be fruitful and multiply, get married. You see, have children. You see? Well, explaining, look, we're going through a present distress, a lot of troubles, hard times, not a good time to do it. That's what he's saying here. I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is, and good for a woman to remain as she is. You know, why do you want to add more problems to yourself? It's not easy to build a house and have a family and children in a world like this. And especially when he thought at this time, erroneously, you know, not necessarily because God told him that, just like all the other apostles, that Christ was coming in their day. So he said, you know, why bother? You see, we're going to be, you know, very soon divine beings, members of the family of God. What do you need to worry about all this hassle? You see, burdens because of the way life is. Now, if things were wonderful and great, no problem. But they were not, unfortunately, and that's what he's saying here. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Why create more problems? Are you loose from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. There is no problem with that. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh. You see, that's the problem, because of the difficult times in which they were alive at the time. You see. But I would spare you. You know, I'd like to make life easier for you. That is, so he says, in essence, that's my opinion. You see, take it for what it's worth. But, you know, if you want to get married, fine, no problem. You know, there is nothing against the law. Verse 29, by this I say, but this I say, you know, brethren, the time is short. You see, that's what he was under, that impression Christ was coming. He says the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives would be as though they have none. In other words, totally give your mind and heart and body and soul, you see, to the pursuit of the kingdom. And therefore, obviously, you're going to have less time for your wife and children and things like that, because, you know, he really believed that time was short. That's the time, you know, sort of, you know, cramming for the test, for the final exam. Those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess. In other words, this is not where your mind should be, but on the kingdom, because it's coming and it's near, the judge, you know, he would say, and others standing at the door. So the whole impression here of these teachings was based on this reality that was reality in their mind, but not in the mind of God. You see, God knew it's not going to be at that time. But, you know, they thought that it was, and to them it was reality. Hey, Christ is coming. So, you know, war is coming. That's not the time to begin all kind of things. You see, all kind of ventures, and, you know, including family and business. You know, everybody goes to war. You know, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? You see, that was a concept of the time. You know, it was not right. It was not the will of God. It was not from God. God didn't say anything about it. They thought those kind of things. And yet, God honored it and did not contradict them. It did not reveal to them otherwise, because he was going to use that to test the hearts and the minds of everyone to see whether they're going to obey him no matter what. And he proved it that most of them did not, because that's when the great fall away came. The falling away, you see, from the faith. Things didn't happen. Paul said they would. The apostles said they would. Nothing happened. Well, who cares about Christ and about this whole religion? You know, because they deceived me, I couldn't get married, couldn't have children, couldn't have business and all that. Well, look what happened. Who needs it? You see? While if they were really obedient to God, that wouldn't matter. They would realize that the apostles made an honest mistake and God used it. You see? Because otherwise he would have contradicted them. But he did not. And so he says, verse 32, "But I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord," especially when you know and you think that he is coming any moment. "But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife." You see? And then he says there is a difference between a wife and a virgin. "The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit." And mind you, all that is under the impression Christ was coming in their day. "But she who is married cares about the things of the world." Oh, you know, what do you mean with things of the world? You know, you got a husband, you got a wife, you got children, you got to go to the market, you know, all kind of things like that. That's what he means by that. "How she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on your stumbling or make it difficult for you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without destruction." Again, always believing that Christ was coming and he's there. So he wanted them to be wholeheartedly given to that service of God and of Jesus Christ. To grow in grace and knowledge and understanding. You see, do everything that you can. And God wants us to do it, but not on, you know, not under the you know, destruction. That is, you know, wrong faith in that sense. "Well, he's coming tomorrow, therefore I got to do my best," you see. Well, God will come whenever he wants to come. That's neither here nor there. You should love him with all of your being and heart, regardless. There are no conditions there. I'm going to serve you with my whole being and heart only for 30 minutes or 3 months or 3 years, you know, assuring me that you are coming at that point. Otherwise, forget it. Well, God wanted to know that. What is it in the heart of man? And he found out. That's why he allowed Paul and others to continue to preach like that, and he never told them, "Now, wait a minute, what are you talking about? I never told you that. Don't preach these kind of things to the brethren. You're going to dishearten them. You know, you're going to cause their falling away later on down the road when they find out it's not happening." Didn't do any of that. Let it go. And use that to find out where is the heart of man. And he did. You see? So all of us must learn from it and not fall for this trap, because a lot of people have been doing it several times in the past many centuries, because they've been deceived by different people, you know, well-intentioned people, thinking that Christ was coming in their day. Verse 36, "But if any man thinks he's behaving improperly toward his virgin," you know, his daughter or virgin daughter, you know, his sister, and if he's in charge of the family, "if she's past the flower of youth," you see. She's getting older, you know. He looks at her and sees that she's miserable. She needs to be married. And so he says, and thus it must be. Let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let them marry. You see, whether it is his girlfriend, you know, who sees that, you know, her boyfriend is not going to marry her. You see, maybe they are already fiancés, whichever it may be. Or maybe it is your daughter, your sister, you know. In either case, you know, the desire for marriage is there. Let them marry. Verse 37, nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in the Spirit, having no necessity, but has power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. Again, always under the supposition that Christ was coming in their day. So always understand that. Why is he saying what he is saying? So, verse 38, when he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. Why? He's going to be able to totally devote himself to God, to Jesus Christ, to the path, to the way, to the service of the brethren, without having to fear about all the problems that come with marriage. You know, just like when you have a business, you know how much time it's going to consume out of your life. You're not going to be able to do a lot of things. You're going to have to deprive yourself. You see, and deprive your family. Well, everybody knows that. You see, only in this case, Paul thought that Christ was coming in his day, and under that assumption and understanding, he preached what he preached. Verse 39, a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. Again, he repeats that law, you see. But again, you have to understand all the other circumstances too. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. What happens if she doesn't marry in the Lord? Well, you're going to have a lot of difficulties and problems, so it's not a good idea. That's in essence what he's saying to them. It doesn't mean that, you know, if she, whatever reason, you know, married somebody who's not in the Lord, that is a horrible sin, you see, against the law of God, and she's going to be condemned and things like that. No. So it is a strong admonition, you know, marry among yourself. Why, you know, why add more problems to your life? So it's a matter of wisdom, matter of knowledge, matter of understanding the mind of God. Just like he told his people Israel, I don't want you to marry, you know, all those guys out there. You know, don't take their daughters, don't give your sons to them, because why? They're going to lead you into idolatry. But suppose they were not. Suppose they would say, you know, well, whatever your religion is, I'm going to follow you. Well, then it's not an issue. So even then, understand what was the intent of it. You see, if it's going to lead you away from God, don't do it. But if it's not, it's not an issue. And so it is here. And so he says, but she is happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment, and I think I also have the Spirit of God. And therefore, he's saying what he's saying. You see, so those kind of matters still were in accordance with the Spirit of God, but not necessarily in terms of the timing of the coming of Christ. And then in chapter 8, he continues, now concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. And the Corinthians were extremely boastful about the fact that they had a lot of knowledge, knowledge of the truth. Now what happens when newcomers to the faith, or the sophomores as they call them today, you know, when they realize that they've got much knowledge, more than the freshmen? Well, it goes to their head, they become arrogant and haughty about it, they begin boasting about it, and they forget the intent of the knowledge. It's not to exalt yourself. I know better, I know things you don't know. That's the nature of people. When they do not govern their minds and hearts by the law of God, you see, but by another law. And so he reminds them, we all have knowledge, so we all know it. So what? Know what? What you, you know, what are you supposed to do with this knowledge? Boast about it? You see, I am of Paul, so I know better things, you know, than you do. You know, you're Peter, you don't know as many things. So, you know, you are Peter, so you know more about Christ because he knew him personally, you see. Or Apollos, well, he didn't know Christ, and things like that. And they had divisions. And to this very day, when people have knowledge, they feel smug, you know, they feel that they are better than you are, they feel that they know more than you do, and especially when they catch you in some statements that are not necessarily correct in accordance with the Bible, and they know it, and so immediately, you know, they get puffed up, and they're going to show you and let you know, you see. Well, all of us are subject to it if we're not careful. Vanity is always there. We always have to be extremely careful. And that wretchedness will continue to be in us. As Paul said, oh, wretched man that I am. I know that there are things that I'm not supposed to do, but I'm doing them anyway. And things which I I'm supposed to do, I don't find myself doing them. Because that nature is still in us, the nature that the devil has injected into us from a very young age. We have to constantly be mindful of it. That's the law of God. Humble yourself before the living, you know, the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you. You don't exalt yourself. You see? So what if you know? That does not mean that you are a kind person, affectionate, compassionate, merciful, forgiving, long-suffering, patient. You see? Matters that Christ would call them the heavier matter of the law. You see? And yet, that's what the academic community is all about. Self-exaltation because they know better, because I'm a PhD, or I'm this, or I'm that. You see? And so a lot of people, you know, unfortunately have the same attitude when they come to the knowledge of the truth. You see, the knowledge of the truth is meaningless apart from the character of God. The devil knows an awful lot. The demons know an awful lot. You see, much more than we do about many things. What does that mean? You see, and a lot of people who come with the same attitude and spirit of the devil also, they know an awful lot. They'll, you know, be great scholars and things like that. But do they have a relationship with God? Are they obedient to the law of God? Are they kind? Are they humble? Are they meek? You see, do they have humility in them? They don't. So it's important to always remember that, that knowledge puffs up by its nature if it's not governed by the law of God. But love, which is the fulfilling of the law of God, which is more important, not only to know, what do you do about it, is what counts as far as God is concerned, not just what you know. And people who walk around and they tell you. It's in the, you know, the people who are in the know. I know, you don't. You know, the knowledge industry that we have, the information industry, you've got to be in the know. That means you're an important person. Everybody wants to hang around you. Well, God says that doesn't mean anything. If you just have knowledge, you see, what do you do about it? Are you obedient to the law of God? And so he says, knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. You see? When you fulfill the law and you walk in it, you're edifying people, you're helping people. And you don't need to do it, you know, with arrogance and haughtiness. And so it says, and if anyone thinks that he knows anything, he knows nothing yet as he ought to know. And wise people, as they get older, realize that. The more I know, the less I know, in comparison to what there is to know. And the people that know a little, they think that, you know, they know so much because they don't realize that there is yet so much to be known. They're still ignorant in so many ways. Well, those are problems of human nature. And the law of God came to teach us, you know, the mirror of the law, to teach us to be humble, to have humility, and to submit ourselves, you know, in our will and our passions and emotions and feelings and our intellectual abilities or prowess or whatever it may be before the mighty hand of God and let Him exalt us. You see? Just because he says, well, this guy knows a lot, so what? You know, is he a kind person, a merciful person? There are some people who don't know much, but they're very humble people, real genuine people, real people. You know that when you're sick and afflicted, you're in need, they will be there. They don't know much, but that much they know. And that's the weightier matters of the law. That's what Paul is trying to explain to us, to the Corinthians, and to every single one of us. If you have knowledge, be careful, because it's going to make you puff up. But when you have love, you're going to edify. And if anyone thinks that he knows anything, he says, he knows nothing. Verse 3, but if anyone loves God, he's contrasting the knowledge of God with the love of God, this one is known by Him, and this is what counts. Not do you know, but does God know you? And He's not going to know you if you are puffed up. You see, He doesn't hang around people like that, who are self-exalted. That's the spirit of the devil. Arrogance, haughtiness, pride. And so, as it said through Jeremiah, now, let not a man boast, you know, in this and that and the other thing, but in the fact that he knows God. You see, and not with the spirit of arrogance, but in meekness and humility. And here he says, even beyond that, if anyone loves God, this one is known by Him. That's the ultimate. If He knows you, if He can tell you, I know you by name, as it said of Moses. Moses wanted to see His glory. He said, okay, I'll show you My glory because I know you by name. You see, that means I know you intimately, inside and out. I know what kind of a person you are, and I'm very pleased with it. You see, that's the kind of knowledge we want to have, the knowledge of God, of Him, and His knowledge of us. And again, to love God, that means that we obey His law, because that's what love is, the obedience to the law of God. That's, you know, these are the only kind of people that God is going to know. And when God knows us, that means, and also when we know Him, we experience Him, you see. And we go along with His nature. We want it. We desire it. We want it inside us to be a part of us. And God is not going to know somebody who is puffed up, arrogant, haughty, self-exalting, you see, deceitful person, pretender. He just knows, but he does nothing about it. He's not going to experience a person like that. You see, he shuns people like that. And that's what he's saying here. Therefore, concerning the eating of things, now, with this introduction of knowledge versus love and the knowledge of God, now he talks about certain things of which people had some questions and arguing about it back and forth. Therefore, concerning the eating of things offered to idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world and that there is no other God but one. Now, what he's going to tell them here is something that earlier was forbidden. You see, when you go to the book of Acts chapter 15, they told him that the Gentiles who are coming to the faith, because they are still new to the faith and they came to know that you do not have a relationship with idols and so don't have anything to do with them, at the time they told them, no, don't even eat anything offered to idols. Keep away from it as far as you can. But now that you grow and you are mature and you are older and you can handle it, that's what Paul is telling them here. He's not contradicting what happened before that. You see, and what he himself taught them in the beginning, after all, little children, you know, you don't allow them to do certain things that you would when they are older, when they can handle it. So there is no contradiction there. And a child cannot say, oh, well, how come you don't let me drive the car, but, you know, you let my big, you know, big brother or big sister drive the car. Well, you're a little child. There's no contradiction here, you see. And some people in their ignorance, you know, they look at bits and pieces of information like that and they, you know, in the Bible, and they don't understand it, and they think, well, the Bible is full of contradictions. Well, that's their ignorance that is speaking there, you see. People who do not are not capable of discerning the Spirit and to know when you can do it and when you cannot. And so he says, we know that idols are not really real, you know, just clay and wood and things like that, just people and their superstitions and their imaginations. Well, that's their problem. You know, they think that it is real. We know it's not real. So, if you've got an issue of meat, you know, it was offered to idol, that's their problem, because in those days, well, you know, they sanctified the animals, and he's speaking here only about clean animals, again, because some people in their ignorance, they think, oh, anything was offered. Well, you study the history of the sacrifices. In those days, both in Israel, everybody knows in Israel there were only clean animals, but even when you study with the Gentiles in their temples and their sacrifices, you always notice that they sacrificed sheep, goats, and ox. You see? A bull or bulls. You see? This is what they offered. That's something they retained from the truth, from Babylon, from Noah, from the righteousness of the men of old who knew the laws of God concerning clean and unclean animals. So there was no issue here about an unclean animal, but the issue was it was offered to idols. Paul says, in essence, well, you have to understand, you know, that there is no such a thing as an idol. There is only one God, and all the rest is just figment of the imagination of people. So people prayed over it and offered it to the idols. That's their problem. We know it's just flesh, steak, meat, you see, a cow, you see, a sheep, a goat, lamb, whatever. And so he says, for even if there is, if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is one God. For them there may be many gods, you know, because they think everything is a god. For us, he says, there is only one God. Who is that one God he's talking about? The Father. That's what he's saying here. Yet for us there is one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we for Him. And one Lord, second in command, second in importance in essence, you see, second in the plan of God and the plan of salvation in our life. Well, that's not what Christianity is all about. To them, Christ, 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 everywhere is Christ, you know. All the songs are about Christ, all the worship and praise is about Christ, you know, a little lip service now and then to God. This is not what Paul taught the Gentiles. He always stressed the fact that God is the center, the number one, the ultimate, above all things. And Christ made the same point all the time throughout his ministry. and commanded us to do likewise, to follow in his example. And those who don't are not of him, as simple as that. He's not interested in your honor and glory for him when you bypass his father. And he put him, you know, sort of a professor emeritus, you know, he's just an old fogey. But, you know, we have this Christian God. There's no such a thing as Christian God. You see, that's a figment of the imagination of the pagans, you know, that just came to a measure of knowledge and understanding of Christ, you know, the Word of God. There's no such a thing as a Christian God. He's the God of Israel. That's what he called himself, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He dealt with them personally. He married them. He came and gave his life for them. He's coming back to marry them, not the Gentile church. Not the whore. That's what he called her. And the harlots, all the churches that came out of her. He's not going to marry them. He's going to cleanse his own wife, Israel, and marry them. You see? And Paul constantly makes it very plain throughout all of his teachings. And, you know, people read it and goes all, you know, over their head because the wool has been placed on their eyes. They can't see. They're blind. And they think that they are in the know. You see? And they don't. They're ignorant. And again, greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.